Well, I think we're finally getting the proper chill in the air for the Winter Classic, Murph. What do you think?
I think we are, and it's starting to feel there's a little more buzz. You know, I had actually been kind of surprised. There wasn't much talk around Boston about the Winter Classic. You didn't feel that buzz we felt back in 2010. Maybe that's because this is the second one now. But, you know, now that the weather's starting to chill down, Christmas has just passed, we're in that in-between week to New Year's, people are getting really excited about it, and I am as well.
Yeah, we might get a little dusting of snow going into the days leading up to the Winter Classic. And look, Murph, I don't blame anybody when it's 65 and humid outside in the middle of December, late December, not getting caught up in the Winter Classic. So this is going to be the Winter Classic edition of the Great American Hockey Show coming up right now. Jimmy Murphy, Joe Haggerty. I'm excited. I can't wait for it. But there is some chatter out there, Murph. I've heard talk in the past, and especially maybe this year, it's the eighth year of the Winter Classic, that, you know, players are getting a little tired of it. The ice isn't as good as it is during a regular season game indoors. The boards don't have true action. The action is slower. You know, all this, the novelty is worn off. They play too many of them. There's all this criticism of it. I say bull crap, all right? I don't buy any of that. I still think this is a very special event. I still think this is the centerpiece of the NHL regular season. I still am filled with wonderment when I see the postcard images of the snow coming down and the rink in the middle of an iconic stadium somewhere. And you know, the players, I think, certainly still get worked up about it to play in it. I'm excited for it. I think the coaches and the players are excited for it. I think the fans are excited for it. I think there really isn't any downsides to this Winter Classic whatsoever.
I'm with you, Joe, and I think the only thing that maybe has people saying that at times is that they've now expanded it to the NHL Stadium Series, and people are kind of saying, you know what, you're tarnishing the uniqueness of it. You're doing too many each year. And
the sort of don't kill the golden goose philosophy.
And I kind of agree with that. Yeah. I mean, you have the Winter Classic. That is the game. You've got that all built up. It's like a Super Bowl in the middle of the season. It's huge, and I think it's a great idea. I think it will always work, but maybe pull back a bit on the stadium series there. You talked about iconic stadiums. I think it's great. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, how can you call Gillette Stadium iconic? And I agree with them in that sense, but at the same time, I'd rather watch this in a football stadium than a baseball park. I mean, obviously you're going to get more tradition in most baseball stadiums than you will in football, but in terms of sight lines, it's a lot better in a football stadium. So
hey, Murph,
I just think people want to complain, to
anybody
be honest.
Where Tom Brady plays every Sunday just about and Bill
That's
Belichick
iconic.
Roams up and down the sidelines is iconic.
Yeah, I'm
by
with you.
By very definition of the word.
I'm with you, man.
And I get some of that, certainly, about the stadium series and playing too many games outdoors and, you know, watering it down to the point where you get tired of it. I kind of like the fact that maybe they're choosing places they would never go with the Winter Classic, like
right.
Dodger Stadium. If they're doing that and they're sort of bringing it to teams that might not otherwise get the chance to ever host a Winter Classic or be involved in one, I'm okay with that.
Right.
But, you know, in talking to the players, they get excited about it. Almost everybody I talked to in that Bruins dressing room was pumped to play in this game. A lot of them had never played in one since there's been so much turnover.
And I know
since,
the Canadians are thrilled because they haven't been in any.
No doubt. There's been so much turnover on the Bruins roster since 2010, so a lot of these guys have never played in one before. Like, the only thing that was even close to getting to, you know, we're over it sort of territory was David Krejci saying, I am looking forward to playing. Now he's not going to play in this one because he's injured, ironically enough. But he said, you know, I'm looking forward to this one. It'll be the second one that we've played in, you know, 5 or 6 years. And then after this, I'm okay if they don't ask us to play anymore. Like,
right.
You know, but he did it under the guise of, this is such a cool thing. I want to make sure other teams and other players get a chance to experience it, not wanting to hog all these Winter Classics for themselves because Boston's the first city
to ever
host two
enough,
of them.
Don't you?
No, they have. Boston's the first city it's ever hosted to.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a distinction in and of
that's
itself.
Right.
So, but the actual pace of the game, look, it's going to be slower. It's not going to be as sleek and as aerodynamic as the ice that you get indoors, even though, you know, a lot of players complain about the TD Garden ice, so they say it's not going to be that much worse going outdoors at Gillette. But I think for one day you can sort of suspend, hey, this doesn't look like what it would be Wednesday night against the Florida Panthers, because it is that sort of special setting that they're going to play at. There's going to be 70,000 people at Gillette Stadium. Yeah. There's going to be a ton of Habs fans and Bruins fans in the stands. I think that's going to create such an interesting dynamic, not only during the game, but also in that parking lot in Gillette after the game is over, that it's going to be pretty fun to watch all around.
Not for the police, though.
Well, they're going to be hard at work, yeah. Just like the players on the ice.
Let me say this, though, Joe. One thing I've always wondered, and I don't know if you agree with me on this, I've heard and seen this idea proposed out there. I definitely agree with it, is why not make the Winter Classic the All-Star game?
Yeah.
Does that take away from the uniqueness of the Winter Classic? That maybe that's why, but at the same time, we hear people saying they might even be doing away with the All-Star game because the ratings are so horrible, the players don't even want to be there and all this stuff. Wouldn't that bring more of a lure to the game for the players and the fans if you made it outdoors?
The All-Star game you're talking about. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, maybe you could even have some kind of a setting where you do the Winter Classic in the same city as the All-Star game.
Yeah.
And you just leave the rink up. And then a few days later, you do the Winter Classic on that same rink. I think that even might – that would allow you to even extend more sort of the sponsors, the fans that come there. It would become a destination of hockey in that city for the week. But I think that would breathe life into the All-Star game, and it would allow, you know, some level of novelty that people might get interested in it again. Whereas now, you know, what was the score last year? Like 19-17
in Columbus?
Yeah, and you
listen to Darren Drager, and, you know, I've heard Pierre LeBrun say it, a lot of the guys up in Canada and TSN.
I also don't think this 3-on-3 thing is going to work either.
No, and the reason they're trying a 3-on-3 is because the All-Star game is literally on life support right now. I mean, they might really do away with it after this year. So, you know, if people do want to save it, that might be a way to do it.
I don't know that they're ever going to truly do away with it, though, just because it's such a big deal for sponsorships and for money and for advertising. And, you know, the entire world of the NHL comes together in one spot, you know, for a couple of days while it's going on. They've got to find some form or fashion to do it, but they've got to think outside the box and do something a little differently. And I think the outdoor game is something that could work for that to resuscitate it.
I always thought they were going to have a tough time getting the ratings on TV, Joe, competing with the bowl games.
They just need to find better musical acts.
Exactly. Yeah, we weren't kidding. you know, and going back to what you were saying about
Shaka Khan's not going to get it done for the NHL All-Star game this year.
You know, but jeez. I don't want to get into it. For network rights and stuff, we can't get into that right now. Let me just say, though, back, you were talking about players. You know, some players have complained a bit. You know, the one thing I'd say to those players, especially if I'm Donald Fehr or their team player rep, is, Einstein, this is a lot of money for you, too. This is revenue that you get.
Right.
Do you understand that? And you know, I know the NHL is taking notes of that, so when they go into their next collective bargaining agreement and being like, so, you guys don't want that? We'll keep it. Don't worry about it. You know, so you can see the players sometimes don't grasp how great this is just for them individually, because they're going to get an extra paycheck out of it.
Yeah, and, you know, you see it with players that just bypass it totally or say that they're hurt and don't want to play because, you know, they've got a light bruise somewhere, so they decide they're
all
not
going
for the weekend.
All that revenue, you talked about the sponsorships, all that comes to the players too.
Yeah,
50-50.
It does. But, you know, above and beyond the business and the logical element of it, Murph, the All-Star game, they have to play one because this is about the 8-9-year-old fan.
Right.
That loves that and is starstruck by all those guys out there. And you and I remember what we were like as kids watching those games. That's really, besides the advertisers and the
good
sponsors. Yeah, but even in general, it doesn't matter to them. The kids are just excited to see that. And it's special to them to see all the players collected into one arena to play in that exhibition game. And that's what the players in the league always has to keep in mind going forward with this, is that it's not necessarily about the 35-year-old fan blogging from his basement and trashing the All-Star game and how crap it is.
Yeah.
It's about the 8 or the 9-year-old kid that still stares in wonderment at what's going on, and everybody else can just like.
Well, you
get
said
over it.
We were driving over here, Joe, and I was complaining about the music acts coming. You said, "Look, Murph, we're getting old. It's not our audience anymore." And you're right. You're right. It's a different audience now, and they have to continue to evolve.
It is, and evolve we will. Onto the next segment, where we're going to talk to Mark Recchi. Here with our guest for this special Winter Classic edition of the Great American Hockey Show podcast, Mark Recchi. No stranger to people around here, obviously three-time Stanley Cup champ, a great run at the end of your career here with the Boston Bruins. Rex, how are you doing? What have you been up to lately?
No, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Just not much. Just enjoying Christmas. I'm actually up in Detroit. My son has a hockey tournament up here and combining a little work and, you know, watching my son.
Nice, Rex. Now, obviously, you've participated in the Winter Classic, but also this is a special Winter Classic, I imagine, for you that you're going to get to be in the alumni game. And also considering the fact that you played for both the Canadiens and the Bruins, you've been on both sides of the rivalry. How excited were you to get the call to be invited to this?
Oh, it was really exciting. Swoops gave me a call, and you know, I jumped on it right away. It was a great opportunity to get in there and see some old friends and get an opportunity to play out there. I mean, just by seeing it at Foxborough, seeing it going up, kind of getting really excited about it.
What you got a unique perspective. You're one of several guys that have played for both teams, knowing people on both sides of this as to, you know, how competitive it's going to be, how much guys are going to get sort of up for it going into it, and how maybe intense it will get during the game, even though it's, you know, an alumni game. It sounds like some guys are pretty into it going into the game.
Yeah, that's what I think they want it to be, a really good game. So I think that's what we're shooting for. We just don't want it to be you know, I think we want it to be exciting and fun you know, a little, you know, try and make it a little competitive and see where, you know, see how it goes. And, you know, there's a lot of good players and a lot of good old retired players that are playing in this. And I think it'll be, you know, try and put on a good show for the fans.
Was there no question that you wanted to be with the Bruins side rather than Montreal side going into this if you had a choice?
Well, Montreal never asked me, so.
We'll just leave
so,
it
no,
at that.
This was good. The Bruins, you know, that's where I finished. I won a cup there. It was great. So, you know, it was really a no-brainer, so.
Rex, looking at that, just at the rivalry there, getting a taste of both sides of that, obviously, you know, I've lived up in Montreal, so I know what it's like up there. But just to give sort of our Boston listeners a perspective of just the passion for the game there, what did you take from your experience up there?
It was an incredible experience. I mean, I got to go from the old guard, the old form, to the new, you know,
that's right,
the new arena there. So I was in that era where it was the changeover. So it was a great, it was unbelievable for me to get to be in that old dressing room. To play in that the old form and get that opportunity and then move to the new one and start something new there. You know, just the whole atmosphere, you know, the Johnny Beliveau's, Cornwallis, you know, they were wonderful people to be around in the history of the game for the Montreal Canadiens. It was just, you know, it was a really exciting place to be. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time there.
And then coming to Boston, in finishing your career in a similar atmosphere, obviously the alumni are very well honored here. You know, recently they just had Milt Schmidt down in the dressing room. They never forget their past there and really honor it well. What was it like to get that side of it?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, that's, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, there's, you know, such history with these teams and traditions and you know, you can't forget these guys that paved the way for us and who made that, you know, that the Boston Bruins, the Montreal Canadiens, the New York Rangers, you know, all the original six teams, they're what made the, you know, our game what it is today. And you can never forget those guys. They're special people. And it's great to have them around. You always like to see them around. You wish they would actually come around a little more than what they do, because I think it's great for the young guys coming in and young and old guys both, really, to have those people around. And you know, it's great talking hockey with them.
Anybody on the Bruins alumni that when you peruse the roster that you're particularly excited about playing with and just sharing the bench with? I know you got to know a lot of these guys pretty well just the last couple of years when you were playing in Boston, and they do event with the alumni. But, you know, when you look at that list of players, anybody that kind of gives you a little excitement knowing you're going to be able to skate around with them?
Well, when you get a guy, you know, Ray Bourque and Brian Leeches and guys like that, that's pretty special. You know, it's, you get an opportunity to skate. I never played with Cam, you know, played against him. So, you know, you have these opportunities to play with these guys in the situation. I played with, you know, I played with Ray in all-star games, but, you know, to get out there and be with them and have fun and you know, really enjoy this atmosphere is going to be something really look forward to.
What's it going to be like looking behind you on the bench and seeing a coach like Don Cherry there?
No, it's going to be awesome. Yeah, he's, obviously he's awesome to be around, and he's great for the game. And you know, it's, you know, it's going to be fun to have him back there. I think he'll bring some, you know, it'll be a lot of fun for the guys, and we'll have some, we'll really enjoy it. And I think this is a great moment for all of us. And, you know, we get, you know, just to get this opportunity to play in a game like this is special. And when you have people like that, just makes it all that much more worth it.
Did you ever have a coach like him that had that type of boisterous personality? And if so, who was it?
No, I never really had somebody like that. No, but I'm excited. I'm sure he'll be fun, and I'm sure he'll be, you know, it'll be a great atmosphere there for him and on the bench. And, you know, we'll just have some fun with it. And you know, I never had somebody that, you know, I don't know if there's many people who quite like that personality.
you've got the experience a couple times, I think, of playing outdoors. What's it like? How special is that? How does it differentiate? Like, does it bring back memories for you from being a kid in Kamloops? Like, where does your mind go, and how does it feel to play outdoors in front of a big crowd like that?
Well, that's awesome. I mean, it's so much fun. I mean, you know, the first time, that's what we did when we grew up. We went out and shoveled off the snow and made, you know, put a couple nets on, and away we went. And that's, we played for, you know, hours and hours and hours out in the outdoor lakes and stuff like that. So it was just, you know, and guys had them in their backyard. They just, you know, freeze whatever their driveways, half of them froze their driveways, and, you know, we had games there. So it's just, it brings back great memories. I mean, that was, you know, you just played all day, you threw your sticks in the middle, you picked your teams, and you went at it, and you had fun with it. And you know, and then you, when you get that opportunity in front of a big crowd and have some fun, enjoy it. And you know, it's obviously a different atmosphere, but at the same time, it's what it is. It's fun, and you got to make the best of it.
What are your memories of the game at Fenway when you think back to that game now in 2010?
Man. Couldn't have asked for anything better weather-wise. I mean, it was 32 degrees with a little light cloud, you know, cover, and it was perfect. I mean, we had a little snow. We had a little bit of snow the day before, you know, when we got to the ice. So, you know, we were all out shoveling, and just, you know, just those memories you just won't forget. And it was just an incredible, great atmosphere in the building, or, you know, in the stadium. And you know, to come back, we tie it late, and just the energy in the whole place. And then Sturmey scoring a big goal in overtime was you know, a great way to end it.
Well, it's going to be pretty cool to have you and Marco reunited there, because you got the game-tying goal, he got the overtime winner. It must be cool for you to see an old teammate like that you guys shared such a magical moment.
Oh, absolutely. Sturmey's one of the best. He's one of my favorite people, you know, I've got to play with him. And you know, it was great. He scored the goal, and it's great to see that he's going to come and play. And you know, we're really looking forward to hanging out with him. So,
what when you think back to those teams you were on with the Bruins, and, you know, winning the cup and sort of the building towards that, you know, what are the memories or the stories that stick out in your mind most? You know, what do you think back on? Maybe as some of the big moments in your mind for that team as it matured into that Stanley Cup winner?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you go through the first year I got there, we lose to Carolina in 7 games. You know, I think we learned from that year. We had a big break in between. We swept the first round, had like 8 or 9, 10 days off, and we didn't handle that well. We didn't come ready for the start of the series. And it was too late, you know, too little, too late. By the time we finally got our engines revved again, we learned a lot from that year. The next year, we lose, and, you know, we get up 3-0, we lose to Philadelphia. You know, we learned from that, and then, you know, it kind of all came together the following year. We win a series 4-0. We learn how to, you know, we just took everything that we'd learned and built around for the few years, and just, you know, grabbed it and you know, with all our experiences, and just took it and ran with it. It was awesome.
Well, I remember talking to you, Rex, after that Philly series where you guys blew the lead in 2010. And, you know, I never forgot it, where you said to me, look, if we got past this round, I think we would have won the cup. And it was almost like remembering that and then seeing what the team did the following year, that sort of propelled you guys on a mission to redeem yourselves. And you don't see many teams really complete that mission. So what was it like when you were, you know, obviously winning the cup was a great moment, but I wonder what it was like when you were standing on the ice after the Philly series, closing out that sweep that you couldn't close before.
Yeah, well, it's a defining moment of our whole team. I mean, you know, we get up and we were a different team that year. We were different. You know, I think management learned. We went and got more centermen. We were deeper at center just in case. I mean, I think we lost, you know, we lost centermen during the year before. And, you know, you just can't replace guys like that. You just can't have enough center defensemen, in my opinion. And, you know, that was a learning experience for management as well. But we just, you know, it was such a great feeling. We just, you know, you could see it in the guys' demeanors. You could see it. It wasn't going to happen again. And, you know, we knew that. And I think Philadelphia knew it too. I mean, I think there was a big difference in what they saw in us as well.
What you were around a lot of pretty talented young forwards at that point, and you know you're more of an experienced veteran that those guys would listen to what you had to say and really take it to heart and apply it out on the ice. When you're in that situation, you come to the Bruins, and I know I remember you saying you just wanted to be a piece of the puzzle when you first got there. But as you get more comfortable and as you talk to these guys and get to know them, like what do you think is the single most important sort of lesson that you impart? Imparted on those young guys and just in general when you're with young players, that younger generation that's in the NHL right now, what do you think is the most important thing that they can learn as they go along that makes turns them into better players?
Well, I think, you know, I'd like to think that I helped on the competitive side, how to prepare every day to, you know, just the will to win every night and the will to do whatever it takes to win every night. And I think, you know, I think that was kind of defined my career. I was very consistent in what I did and you know, just things like that. And then on the other side, when you get experience, it's just sharing that with them and helping them along and seeing how you react. I mean, a lot of these young guys kind of look to see how you are, how you're acting, how you're reacting to things, you know, and sometimes that's more important than even talking. They want to see how you respond to things. And if you respond the right way, I think it helps everybody in the long run. And I think these guys were wonderful guys who wanted to learn, wanted to get better, and wanted to win a championship. And they just, you know, I think they embraced everything.
Any of them in particular, the young Bruins forwards you were with, that you look on with, you know, more pride than normal now, just like, at you know, look at what he's turned himself into or look at what he's become? Obviously, they've all turned into really good players, but, you know, any of them that stick out in your mind when you watch them play now?
Well, I mean, they have to do it on their own, but, you know, obviously Bergie and Marchand were two special guys for me that I got an opportunity to play with, you know, especially the last year. David Krejci, you know, I'm a huge fan of his and the type of person he is. And you know, so guys like that to me were, you know, and they all were. They're all special. I mean, we just had a special team. And when you have that, you know, that's when you give yourself a chance to win a championship. And that's how it happened.
Rex, and just kind of sticking with that and preparing, helping to prepare the players and knowing how to go out there and have that win no matter what attitude, what was it like going into the Winter Classic? Because obviously we talked about the different atmosphere you're going to have and the different elements that could present itself. How did you help prepare those guys to sort of keep that mentality where it's a real game? I mean, and especially going in this game, these guys are battling for first place. So how do you sort of balance, I guess, the whole event versus this being a real game?
Well, I think you got to set the tone right off the bat. Your first shift, you have to set the tone and say, you're here to play. You're here to play hockey. Yeah, it's a show for the NHL, but you know what? This means first place for us, and we're here to play. I'm not going to change anything that I do from an indoor rink to an outdoor rink. I'm going to play the game the same way and do the right things and win a hockey game, try and win a hockey game. And that, you know, the leaders will do that on both sides, and whoever does it better is going to and come up on top.
Surprised when you look at the Bruins now, maybe the last couple of years from where they were when you ended your career there and the years, a couple of years after that, to not making the playoffs last year and sort of, you know, fighting for their playoff lives now this year. Surprising that it happened as quickly as it did, or is it sort of just the natural cycle of things in your mind?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't think it would happen that quick, and you know, but I think they, you know, they've kind of gotten back to where they, you know, I think they lost a little bit of their identity in terms of what they were as a team, and I think they're starting to find that again. And you know, I think Claude's done a terrific job there. I think their leadership's done a great job, and you know, got this thing back on track and playing the way they're, you know, with the way they're capable of. When you have your core guys like they do, it's not going to last long. They're going to keep it going in the right direction. for the most part, like they have.
Any of those moves surprise you that they've had to make over the last couple of years, whether it was, you know, trading Sagan, whether it was trading Boychuk, just, you know, it's moves that were very unpopular around here, but, you know, and maybe raised eyebrows somewhat around the hockey world, but any of those moves particularly surprise you?
Well, yeah, I mean, Tyler's move, I mean, really surprised me when you have a franchise player. You know, that's and he's a young franchise player. You know, that the one always surprises you. I mean, Johnny Boychuk, I know they were, you know, obviously when they get in salary cap trouble, they have to make moves. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to manage that and do, you know, you're trying to build a team, keep a team, but, you know, you have a cap and you have to make moves. And, you know, they're not going to always be popular and they're not going to always be the right moves. And you have to really be careful on who you recognize the guys you got to keep around and guys you don't. And you know, it's a real fine line you know, it's just something that teams learn from and, you know, that they, you know, have to manage as a management group, really.
Sort of keeping with that adapting talk here, Rex, you know, you look at Zdeno Chara right now, and obviously, as you know, when you get older in the NHL or in any pro sport, you need to adapt to the way the game is going. And this game has become so fast and so young. And, you know, at times he's had some struggles out there. What have you thought of the way he sort of applied his game, but at the same time tried to adapt and change it a bit?
Well, he's done it. I think he's done a great job. Obviously, last year I think was an aberration, really, with his knee, and he just couldn't get back to the form that he was. And as you get older, you have to learn to be a little bit smarter. You know, it just, you know, sometimes you have to let the game come to you, and you have to, you know, take what they give you and do what you can. And I think that Z is, you know, he's a smart player. You know, I think he's just managed his game, you know, more. I mean, I'm sure he's still in wonderful shape. He's got to manage his ice, you know, his off ice workouts, and that's learning how to do all that as you go along. You know, he's a smart guy. He's a great guy. He's a great leader. And to me, it looks like he's figured it out. So,
is one of the obstacles when you're in a situation like Z2? Is one of the obstacles learning to trust your teammates a little more and trust the younger guys a little more? Because obviously, that team got a lot younger around him. And I know we all know how much of a perfectionist Z is and how much pride he takes in his game. But do you have to learn to just sort of trust those guys a little more?
Absolutely. It's all, you know, it's all in trusting your teammates. You know, when there's so many changes, you know, there's so many different personalities come in, you have to figure it out. And you know, to me, it's, you know, he seems like he's figured it out and the group has figured it out. You know, you get, you know, how to handle young guys, you know, make sure they're buying into everything that you want, you know, the team wants them to do is a big thing. And, you know, you got to make sure these young guys stay the course and do the right things.
You mentioned the young guys and we referenced him before, but and I don't know how much you've been able to watch the Bruins this year, but when you have Marchand, has he even taken another step forward this year in his development, or, you know, climbed up even one more notch as far as where he is as a player within the NHL? And, you know, obviously he's been a great duo with Bergeron for a long time, but it seems like he's even gone up another level this year.
Well, in my eyes, he's always been there. So, you know, he's always been that player that he is right now. You know, when I first got there, I wasn't sure what he was going to be. You know, I wasn't sure what type of a player he was and going to be, and he was kind of up and down and couldn't quite get it going up the bigger level. And then, you know, he found his niche and he's done a wonderful job since the day he finally got a regular spot. He's ran with it. He's a very talented player who is very competitive. As long as he doesn't lose that competitive edge, he's going to continue to be the player he is.
Well, and how much credit do you take Rex for that duo being so good since you kind of, you know, shepherded them along at the beginning of them being together?
I don't take any. Zero. They dragged me along.
You know, hey, Don Cherry, the other in the last Hockey Night in Canada, he said Brad Marchand is his Hart Trophy winner right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There we go with Don Cherry's bold statements. But you know what? He's definitely the Bruins MVP for sure.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't dismay with Bergie. Bergie playing center, that's a pretty tough position, and he starts in his own end most of the night too, so he does a heck of a job. Those two both do a great job.
And the way Bergie, too, has transformed himself on the power play. He was always a good power play player, but what he's learned to do there has been unbelievable.
Well, your hockey IQ has to be so good to play that where he plays on the power play. And, it's a very it's a position that's, can really create a lot of opportunities. And you have to be selfless. And, you look at Jonathan Toews last year, did it with Chicago. That's where he was. He's up in the slot, in net, playing those little areas. They have great hockey sense, and they can make those little plays, smart plays, find those little areas that create space for other people. And it's a selfless thing, but that just shows you what type of leader Bergie is and his hockey sense just to be in those positions.
Did you see, obviously I think he's always had a lot of the hockey sense, even as a 18, 19 year old when he first came into the league, but did you really see some of that maturation of him into the leader that he is now? He was always a good leader too, but as you were there, sort of see him grow. I mean, he credits you quite a bit with sort of showing him how to be a leader and some of the things that he employs now, he says that he learned directly by watching you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw he had leadership skills. It's just, he was a little bit quieter guy, a little bit more reserved. And there was times you just kind of had to kind of nudge him along a little bit. You knew it was in him, so it wasn't, if I didn't know it was in him, I wouldn't have nudged. But, when you know it's in him, you just kind of nudge and you just kind of lead him in the right direction. And he's a smart guy. He's a great guy, great teammate. And he figured it out. And, he deserves all the credit in the world. He's a heck of a hockey player. He's a great guy, great teammate, and he's evolved into one of the top players in the game.
What's your single favorite story from that cup run in 2011, Rex? I know you got to have one.
Oh God, you put me on a spot. I'd have to think about it.
I don't know which ones you can tell on the
Yeah, suitable for family listening too. Let's put that in.
Yeah, I don't know if there was any one defining moment, but I really liked right from the get-go. We went up to, we went up to Vermont and we had a great couple days up there. I thought that was wonderful. I think our trip over Europe to start the year was something special. All kind of just started in those moments, and those were the times that we really grew together and brought everything together, really. And it just was, that's where the process started. And, we had a great number of nights in Ireland and then in Czech. We're just all together having a great time. And those things you never forget.
Well, we look forward to having a great time with you when you get to Boston in the middle of this week, Rex. You'll never have to buy a beer in this town.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Let's talk a little state of the Boston Bruins and where they sit right now. Coming out of the holidays, going into the Winter Classic, they're in a really rambunctious Atlantic Division where teams, over the course of a couple of games, can go from the outhouse to the penthouse, or at least from first place into one of the wild cards, all closely packed together. Any team that goes on a long winning streak could create some distance between themselves and the rest of the pack. And now David Krejci hurt. The Bruins are starting to hit a little bit of turbulence, a little bit of post-Christmas turbulence. Where do you see this team right now, from the nice 15-game stretch they had to some of the losing that we've seen? Are they somewhere in between? It's awfully hard to get a full gauge on where this team is at and who they are.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm with you. I still think there are a lot of question marks around them. But one thing I have seen that has been consistent since basically the end of October, Joe, is they are resilient. And I'll give them that. And they don't quit, usually. There's not many games where you could say...
Well, they're definitely not quitting on Claude Julien. That is for damn sure. And we've seen that time and time again, and I think that's a great...
They may blow leads, as they did against Buffalo. But they've had a lot of comebacks where either they win or they fall just short. And I think with a young group, that they have that mentality that they're always in. I think that's a strong point to have there, and that's a strong quality to have going forward. However, we referenced the game they blow, that Buffalo game. I mean, I think there's still quite a bit of those games left in this group because I just think they're still learning, and I don't think they have the skill they need to be consistent, and I think that we're going to see a lot of this up and down. You talk about the way the division's fluctuating. I mean, you look at the Atlantic Division right now, and the only team that I could say really that has had any semblance of consistency would be the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've always done that. But that's still a team that I think the Bruins can beat.
And
so,
they've got a superstar in the making in Dylan Larkin, right, who's really impressed. I remember Adam McQuaid telling me during the preseason, that kid's good. You got to watch out for him. Like, he made an impression on the Bruins before the season even started.
Yeah.
And they knew what Detroit had there. And Jeff Blashill's done a great job.
He's just a clone of Babcock,
well,
really.
I mean, stepping into Babcock's footsteps. It's amazing.
He sounds like Mike Babcock.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? Back to the Bruins there. It's going to be very interesting, Joe, to see what they do going forward because, you know, you said that you've heard some rumblings that they're all in and they want to go for it. Now they throwing away this building for the future and stocking up picks and everything? Because if they want to go all in, they're going to have to trade away one of those first-round picks. I don't know if that's the right decision.
And they had three first-round picks last year, I think they feel comfortable dealing one away, especially if it's San Jose where it's going to be middle and it's not going to be like, you know, at the bottom of the – they're not going to be in the lottery with that first-round pick. It doesn't look like anyway. So, you know – having had all those first-round picks that they turned into prospects last year, having their own pick this year, I think they feel comfortable trading that pick away if it's the right situation. Now, are they going to do that for a player they're only going to have for a month and a half that's not a perfect fit? I don't think they'll do that. But I also know, just from talking to people, that ownership expects the playoffs, upper management expects the playoffs, and, you know, they don't want to compromise that, and they're not going to settle for less than that. They're not going to look totally long view and make every single decision based on this is what we should do for the betterment of the franchise for the next 5 to 10 years, rather than this team needs to get the ship righted and get back into the playoffs this year and start pushing forward, and that expectations should be raised, and this should be a team that makes the playoffs every single year, and this is a fan base that deserves that and demands that. And I think that's kind of the mentality that they have, which I don't know that I necessarily agree with it on all fronts, but that's where they're coming from.
Right. I mean, and I don't agree with it either because, you know, if you ask a lot of fans, I don't think they want their team to be one and out
right.
for 5 straight years, which I could see that this team, this particular group, doing that a lot. They'll be just good enough to make it or just bad enough not to make it. And that's where they're going to be, kind of in the middle for the next 3 to 5 years. And, maybe they should listen to fans more. But obviously Jeremy Jacobs was a little more worried about the gate there. So we'll see.
Yeah, and that's a whole part of it is, you know, look at all the money that they're pumping back into the community, into their own capital expenditures and things that they're building. And that you know, doesn't come from nowhere.
Yeah, so they need those playoff tickets.
It has to come from somewhere. So, and they're in the business of making money to begin with. But I think that's sort of the push and pull of the organization and what Cam Neely demands.
Too. I mean, you know, that's why we see so much parity right
but,
now.
But
I mean,
to their, you know what, to their end of it, and to argue against kind of what we're saying here, outside of Washington, who in the East really scares you? You know, who in the East is not beatable aside from Washington?
Well,
I think Washington
if
is.
If you get a healthy Carey Price back, Montreal to me.
I guess, but I think we've seen enough, enough weaknesses with that team right now to not be as blown away as we were in the first couple of months of the season. You know, Detroit is good, but I think Detroit is very beatable.
You think the Rangers are going to stay mediocre, though?
Yeah.
I could see them bouncing back.
I don't know.
And they're a team that's going to go really all in, not just in to make the playoffs. This team this is it, I think, for their window to win the Cup. So I could see them making a huge deal to push them over the hump.
Yeah, they could. They definitely will down the stretch be, I think, a bigger player to make a move like that. But, like, all being said, you know, when they're viewing, let's say David Krejci's out for an extended period of time and they get into a situation where they're falling out of that sort of playoff picture, I still think they're going to make moves to try to get in, even if that's going on. I still think that they're going to get a defenseman and that they're going to try to complete that top four of what they have to try to make it into the playoffs and make a push. And they have to. You know, as currently constituted, if they don't make a deal, they may make it in the playoffs and they will get destroyed in 4 games because Adeno Chara is going to be on fumes at that point.
Yeah.
You can already see him making more mistakes this month than he did the previous two because he's playing 25 minutes a night and he can't handle that workload.
Don't expect him to admit that.
No, he will never. And I wouldn't. He's the Terminator with no weaknesses whatsoever. I will break you, Ivan Drago. But I think they need somebody that can step in and lighten some of that load for him because they don't have a guy like that now. He's carrying a lot of other players right now in that roster, and he can't do it
anymore. So if Winnipeg comes to you and says, give me one of those first-rounders for Dustin Byfuglien, do you do it?
I might be tempted to do it, even though I don't think he's a good fit.
I think he would drive
Claude Julien nuts.
Yeah, I mean, we were discussing this in a
he's
way.
He's irresponsible
over here, man.
Defensively.
Claude Julien's heart rate is not good right now, I don't think, with the way this team plays. If you add Dustin Byfuglien to the mix, he could very well end up in a hospital.
Murph, Claude, you tried to use the Jedi mind trick on me in the press conference after the game was over. Like, you will not ask me a question right now.
Because he needed that calm down period.
Yeah, he wasn't ready to ask questions. He needed an extra 10 seconds to compose himself before he was ready to ask questions after he sat down.
One quick one, and well, I don't know if we can make it quick. We'll do our best. But, you know, when it became evident that Steven Stamkos might hit the free agent market or maybe on the market, on the trade market coming the trade deadline, you know, Bruins fans, as any other NHL team's fans, saying he can come here, we can do this, we can throw this guy at him, we can throw this guy at him. Announcers trying to throw in their two cents saying why that team can get Steven Stamkos. I truly don't think the Bruins are going to be in the Steven Stamkos mix at all. You agree?
Ryan Johansson, I'm not so sure about that either, but definitely not Stamkos. And they need – that's, you know, they have some forward. I have no problems with their forward group.
I have no problem
I think
with the
their forward group is okay.
Three quarters of their salary into one player.
No.
And that's what it's going to take.
They need defensemen. They need a young defenseman that's a number one in the making, that is somebody that's under their control for a long time, and somebody that they can groom into what they want.
Well,
you know, they don't have that right now. It is a clear and present need on that roster, and they're an incomplete team without it. The problem is those guys don't grow on trees, and they're a line of about 15 teams looking for that same exact
there's
player.
There's a guy, and they've apparently not made him available yet, but there might come a point soon where Cam Fowler becomes
Cam
available.
Cam Fowler, Sammy Vatanen, I think, might
one of those guys
they
might
even
be
like
perfect
him more.
Yeah,
and we'll see. They might try to fire the coach before they start trading off the players.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens in Anaheim.
We shall see. But it's going to be interesting, Joe, because, I mean, I think this is a team that I don't think they thought they were going to be in this position, you know, circling around first place at this point in the season, and they are. And now their approach has to change a bit.
Well, once they were in playoff position past Thanksgiving, I said two things. Claude Julien sticking around this year, and they're going for it for the playoff run. And I continue to believe that. But for now, we're going to switch gears, Murph. Good talk.
Yep.
And let's go to three periods. Just wrap it up. You ready, Murph?
It's me.
Yeah, we're just doing see you later. New Year's resolution?
For the Bruins? If you're the Bruins, by New Year's.
Okay. All right. As we're wrapping up.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you going to do? I'm going to do play Charles.
Okay. I get it.
Okay.
5-4-3. All right. That's it for today. With this being New Year's Day Winter Classic, Murph, we got to do New Year's resolutions. What is your Bruins New Year's resolution?
Well, if I'm the Bruins, my New Year's resolution would be to play Zdeno Chara less. I know that it's tough to do with the guys you have behind him, but find a way for him to get less minutes. And it's not necessarily knocking his play. It's just like, you know, we've discussed before, he's getting that period in his career where he needs to maybe get a little rest. Play him less, and also make him face the music when he has a bad game.
Yeah, 25 minutes a night he should not be doing. 23 minutes a night like last year is much closer to it. And I was as disappointed as you were that he was not available to speak after that loss
against
Buffalo. The Buffalo Sabres, where he was on the ice for three goals against. I think he definitely should have faced the music afterwards. My New Year's Bruins resolution is Claude Julien should wear the fedora that fit right on the top of his head for the Winter Classic, just like the
Beautiful.
Last time in 2010. And not only that, I want Claude to wear that little fedora for the rest of the season moving forward.
Indoors.
And it could be like the good luck charm where they give it to a player, the player of the game, after the game is over. That's my New Year's Bruins resolution. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks, Murph. Have a good New Year, bud.
You too, buddy.
All right, that's it for the Great American Hockey Show. Remember, keep it great, keep it American, and always keep it about hockey. Want to hear more Comcast SportsNet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.